Jets, he scores!
Welcome once again to the Leafs Nation podcast. This time around with me, of course, is Danny Gray, but we've also got another special guest. We've got Corey Pronman with us from Hockey Prospectus, among other things. Corey, how's it going?
Hey, going fine, guy. Yourself?
Doing well. We're here, most of all, I guess, to talk draft and a few prospects. So we'll start right off with the Leafs angle here. Corey, what do we know about the Leafs scouting staff? Who are they? What do they like? What are they looking for in players? Do you know of any tendencies?
Well, the head of adventure scouting, I believe, is Dave Morrison. He was there before the Burke era started. I think he came on in 06 or 07. If I remember correctly, he made the Toulouse pick. He made the Shen pick. They didn't have a first rounder under 1 year with him. I don't think he's been around that long to have him much of a real tendency. And he also was there during several different eras. So I'm not sure. Usually upper management sometimes has a real play in terms of philosophies. So it's really hard for me to get a real feel of if their scouting staff leans in one direction because of the change in regimes.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, we certainly know what Burke likes as far as types of players. Although what he said that he's after doesn't always seem to be what he goes after. He says for him, skating is a huge part of his selection process. But to be honest with you, a lot of his picks, that's been the knock on them, eh? Looking through the Leafs depth chart.
You know, in terms of the system, Nazem Kadri is more of a hands guy than a fast guy. Tyler Biggs, I would say, is a good skater, not a great one, but definitely good for his size. I wouldn't say they drafted a lot of high-end speedsters at the top of the first. Percy definitely has some skating issues as well. Ross is okay. I would say he's bad, but not amazing. So I would agree with you on that front. But I mean, player acquisition goes beyond the draft as well. So I haven't really followed a lot of their NHL personnel moves to know who he's moved in or not. Again, obviously Kessel is a really tremendous skater, so there's some balance there.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, obviously, I think one of the things that Burke has tried to do since coming in is establish a relationship with a German team. I'm not sure which German team it was in the German league. And then they brought Marcel Mueller over from there, and I'm not sure if they did bring Corbidian Holzer over as well. But they're trying to look at sort of untapped markets, and I think that's a lot of the sort of reasons why they draft guys out of the college system is that they're more comfortable with guys from there. They have sort of a relationship from there. Do you know of any other guys in Germany they might be targeting, or anyone over in Europe?
Well, there's not really a lot of strong guys coming out of Germany this year. I mean, obviously they brought over Marcel Mueller a couple of years back, and he's probably their top German prospect, although it's really questionable if he's going to make that jump from the Marlies to become a full-time NHLer. Going forward, again, I admittedly do not pay much attention to the German league just because, well, it's the German league. Sometimes when they're in a draft year, you'll hear about a real top name coming out of that country, but like this year I have not heard any indication
right.
that there's a real top German prospect.
Now, the location of the Marlies in Toronto obviously has some benefits for the team as far as development goes. They can use Francois Allaire to work with guys like Scrivens, Rinus, and Ouya. They can use the Leafs facilities. It's really easy to call guys up. But do you think that places some added pressure on prospects like Nazem Kadri or Joe Colburn? Would it be better for their development if the Marlies were in a more remote location? Or do you think that the positives of having the prospects close to home outweigh the negatives?
There definitely is an added exposure element to them. I just from talking to scouts when I want to learn about Leafs prospects, it's very easy for me to find someone who's been to a Marlies game and who scouted it just because they're in the GTA and they get much more eyes on them than I would say the average AHL prospect, just because they are playing in Toronto. Never mind the fact that they're an affiliate of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That factor definitely is in there, but I actually prefer that happening. I'd rather they get their whole exposure and develop stretches out while they're in the AHL as opposed to the NHL. So if they're going to get scrutinized and get a lot of eyes on them and get that whole experience out, I'd rather them do it in the American League. So I actually prefer that they are in that kind of high scrutinized market while they're not in the context like the NHL, where every game matters, more or less.
Okay, so you think that it sort of prepares them for a high-pressure situation?
Exactly, because you're going to hit those bumps sooner or later, so you might as well do it while the games don't count, I suppose, when it comes to the NHL organization.
Yeah, so, I mean, Kadri is an interesting case. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, he's not the strongest skater, and I kind of wonder whether or not that's going to, you know, really impede his ability to produce at the NHL level, which is critical for him, being that he's such an offensively minded player. But, yeah, I guess I'd like to think that the opportunity he has to interact with the media on a daily basis, being in Toronto, has got to be a benefit going into actually playing with the big club.
Yeah, again, this guy has been under the radar for a couple of years now. I kind of like to be taking a slow little bit of his development, kind of let him basically just get a little kinks in his game worked out, and just really just kind of slowly get prepared for that big jump, become an everyday Maple Leaf. I mean, how many times has Don Cherry talked about him in Hockey Night in Canada? So this guy has been definitely under the spotlight for a while. And again, some people can have it, some people don't. Even those who don't have the ability to, even those who do have the ability to handle the scrutiny still need to learn what it's really like in the NHL spotlight. So I think it will really prepare him well for what he does eventually become a full-time Leaf.
I am a chimbley sweet, no bed to lie, no shoes to hold my feet.
Right on. So the Leafs are drafting fifth overall. Who do you like?
Well, I can tell you who I have fifth on my board, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be there at five. Ideally, when you're thinking of the top of the draft, my philosophy is if there is a top end forward there, that is who I ideally would be looking for when I was in management. I would say there are four legitimate top forwards in this draft, arguably five, but I would probably be outside the consensus on that. Top four forwards I would want to target would be Yakov Kalinenko, Alex Galchenyuk, and Philip Forsberg. I'm very skeptical taking a defenseman in the top five, just because defensemen have a lot of risk projection on them. I'm pretty sure, as a Leaf fan, you're well aware of that with Luke Shen currently.
Yeah.
Matt Dumba and Ryan Murray are potentials that can go to top five. But me personally, I always would prefer forwards in the top five, if it's even an argument between them and a defenseman, more or less.
Okay. All right. Now, one thing I've sort of been thinking about with regards to Yakupov and Galchenyuk, how often do they play on the same line, do you know? Like, you know, is this going to be, is this going to be a Robbie Schrempf situation where he's just, you know, sort of riding on someone's coattails, or is Galchenyuk, you know, the real deal independent of Yakupov?
Last year they played together a lot. When Galchenyuk came back this year, he was brought in very sparingly, was not put on the top line immediately, although he was by the playoffs, just because he's come back from a knee injury. They're kind of letting him come in a little slowly. But last year they played together a lot, Yakupov and Galchenyuk. And to be honest, none of them were being kind of lifted by the other. When I talked to scouts who had watched Sarnia, some of them would come away and say Yakupov was good one day, not good. Yakupov was the best of the two one day, and Galchenyuk was the best of the two another day. So if both of their skill sets created debate in scouting circles, at least at the beginning of this draft season, of whether or not which one was better. So that should at least put in perspective, I don't think Galchenyuk is better than Yakupov, but to put in perspective of what kind of talent level he has, that he was even being in the debate of potentially being better than Yakupov.
Okay.
Some people were hoping he would go play at the World Under-18s are going on right now, but I do not believe, nobody really reported this, but I don't believe he was eligible for the United States under 18 teams due to how little he played in the United States. And that's the only country he's ever wanted to play for. So he's just, his season's over. He got like 4 games in.
Now, do you think he'll be available at 5 for the Leafs?
It really depends who's picking, because some teams have different philosophies when it comes to injuries. You know, you'll meet some scouting staff and say, if I don't see a guy 20, 25 times a year, I don't have a real feel for him, and I just wouldn't feel comfortable drafting him. While he was amazing last year, the guy I think is so was Yakupov. And Yakupov had significant development this year. He was not only a different player, but there was notable change. And teams who have not seen a player play for a long time would have questions of how would his development have gone this year, what kind of player is he now? We only have a good feel for him. How big of an injury risk is he? And it really depends. Like, obviously, you see a team like Tampa Bay and Ottawa didn't really care about those kind of things. They took Jarrett Cowan and Brett Connolly despite injured years. But other teams will be risk-averse. So it really depends. Again, I'm not going to speculate on what each team's philosophies are, but depending who's picking in the 4 spots ahead of them, depending on what their take is on picking players who have been out an entire year with a top 5 pick, will determine where Galchenyuk goes or not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would be surprised if say, Ryan Murray didn't crack the top 5, but as you say, I mean, it's difficult to predict what team is going to feel what way come the draft. And at the moment, you know, it's rumored at least that one or two of these top 5 picks are in play. So we really can't even be sure which teams are going to be there picking.
Yeah, and I think with a team like Montreal, who, when they were coming to the year, they were not, you know, nobody really thought they were going to be this bad.
Yeah.
And it was already rolled that, you know, the Markov, I mean, it's not really an excuse because Markov is injured every year, it seems, but the Markov, they definitely hurt them and they definitely seemed to get and they were playing well until the Martin firing when it kind of all went downhill. So there's at least some argument that they are not a true lottery team, although I'm pretty sure we can go back and forth on that. And they might, and I can see at least the theory that they could trade out of there just to get some current day assets. But I think the real wild card that will cause trades will be Galchenyuk, as we talked about before, and Grigorenko. Depending on if teams feel comfortable taking those players or not, there might be other teams that are very high on them, don't want to risk them going to another club, and could try and trade up to get either one of those two, because those are the two that seem to have question marks attached, but very high upside as well.
Okay, so high risk, high reward situations.
Correct.
Are there any dark horses for you right now?
Yeah, there's this one Finnish forward who's playing over in the SM Liiga. Name is Tuvo Teravainen.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy I've been high on for a good portion of the year, and I'm talking to scouts now. There's a lot of teams that are talking about him potentially going in the top 10. Whereas I would say in January, it was a questionable if he was even going to be a first rounder. I personally have him well inside my top 10. He's a fantastic skilled player. I think he's like 3 days removed, 2013 draft. He's playing second line in the SM League towards the end of the year. Yeah, he's a guy who I think has, at least potentially, could crack a first line if his development is well. And I would not be surprised if he was a little higher than a lot of these, I guess, quote-unquote mock drafts people post online. Say he will.
Now, last year, Sean Couturier fell from, you know, ranked 1 or 2 going into the draft, fell all the way to 8 of the Flyers, and he looks like a pretty smart pick right now. Do you see anybody else falling similarly to Couturier? Could Galchenyuk be that guy if people are sort of more risk-averse?
I don't think Grigorenko will fall. I think, just because he's played a full year, and, as I said before, there's some risk with him based on the perception in the industry right now, but I don't think he's a guy who would flat-out fall. People who would fall, I think, would be Morgan Rielly of all candidates, I think, just because he has the injury thing like Galchenyuk, but he's also a small defenseman. Definitely does not have the out-of-the-world upside that Galchenyuk has. And, again, I still think he's very talented. I have him very high on my personal ranking. I think Morgan Rielly is the kind of guy who, if you don't really look and you are risk-averse of injury and you don't like small defensemen, he's a guy who could potentially fall. So much pain inside.
different topic. Where do you stand on drafting for talent versus drafting for position?
I like that question because I think there's like a recent among most hockey fans that every team drafts for best player available. And I know a lot of GMs or head scouts, when they're put on camera or for interviews, always say that they always draft for best player available. But I'll just let you guys know that from teams that I've talked to, there are quite a few that have position as a heavy decision variable when it comes to making their draft. So personally, my sense on that is I think that position has to at least be somewhat of a major factor in your decision making, because if you build up an excess in a certain position, very rarely can you just deal off that excess in equal value for a need. You rarely see that. I mean, you saw the Vancouver-Buffalo trade that happened at the deadline with Cody Hodgson and Zach Kazian, but that's something that rarely happens. You rarely see a good young forward go for a good young defenseman. Teams tend to fall in love with their own prospects. You know, they put all the time into their development. They very rarely let them go just to fill a need.
The other thing I was going to add was just that, I mean, post-draft development is equally important as the actual draft, at least equally important, maybe more so. So, you know, all things being equal, I suppose, you know, when you're looking at two prospects trying to decide which one, I suppose what position they play is a logical tiebreaker, right?
I would definitely be a top secondary one. I would be looking at, in this, you have to not look at the NHL team, unless you look in the top five, those players, if not within a year, usually. But when I'm picking in the mid first, late first, or young, I would pick them, essentially. I'd say, where the organization need more talent, more depth, et cetera, et cetera. And that's usually what I would be looking at if I were drafting this. Where does our system have major holes, and what should we will be looking to fill into our five-year projections?
Does that mean you think a team like Edmonton might look at taking a defenseman with one of the top picks or trading down to sort of fill an organizational need? Or do you think that they simply just can't pass on Yakupov?
They can't pick a defenseman. It doesn't make sense. If they need a defenseman, that pick needs to go for an older defenseman. I mean, if they pick Ryan Murray or they pick Matt Dumba. Dumba is 17 and just recently turned 18. That guy is not going to be ready to be a significant producer for at least 3 to 5 years. Hall, yeah. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Eberle's entry-level contracts are going to be well over by then. Some of them might even be approaching unrestricted free agency by then. And that's just not how defenseman development works. It takes a lot longer, much longer than forwards do. And those players, you occasionally will find a Drew Doughty and Petr Angelo that can step in and be significant guys within a short amount of time. Most of them have to be 22, 23, 24, 25 even before they're real top defensive producers. So if they pick Ryan Murray, he might have to be on their top four for a couple of years. There might be a high-end producer on a blue line that really needs it. So if they really think that defenseman is a pressing need, and they need that now to be competitive, considering that they have all those strong forwards up there, they need to trade that pick for a great defenseman or pick Yakupov and deal one of their great forwards for a great defenseman, because just drafting a D-man will not work.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree there. So I guess we'll have to consider Edmonton one of the potential dealers when it comes to their first-round pick.
The only two candidates I see, and again, they would be targeting a high-end young defenseman. That's what their ideal target. You would probably go to Phoenix. That's probably, they have a real excess against defenseman there. I mean, Yano is going to be like under 23, but he's young. He had Oliver Ekman Larson, who's great. David Rondblad should be there. Still needs a great player. Brandon Gormley, I wouldn't say he's equal value for a guy like Yakupov. But that makes the decision a little easier. Phoenix, I would say, does not have a lot of scoring. They have an excessively young, great defenseman. They'd be a great target. And that would probably be the one. Nashville, potentially a second-tier candidate, but Phoenix would be the team I would be looking to make a deal with.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that would probably make sense for that matchup is that Phoenix, of course, is probably not looking to take on any kind of extra salary at this point. So if they're ditching any kind of salary commitments for another pick, it's probably good news for their books.
The thing is, the first overall pick tends to get a big signing bonus anyways. What if Tavares had been Hall's and Ryan Nugent Hopkins' cap hit? They're like 3.35 or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. So, that's true. Although the cap hit is always much greater than the actual salary paid out, though.
Right, because it's because of the signing bonuses
from
the pick first overall. But I don't think someone like Ekman Larson is getting paid that much currently anyway. So I don't know if it'd be that much drastic a difference. Maybe even more salary would be paid out.
I don't know who mentioned it in the Leafs front office staff, but they mentioned that they've been looking at players who were born later on in the draft year as a way of sort of, especially for their late round picks, to pick a few guys maybe who haven't blossomed yet. Has that been something you've noticed, or is that something they've stated as a goal? And who could you see them targeting that sort of a younger birthday relative to the rest of the draft class?
There's an important distinction to make there. By a late birthday, are you referring to beyond the September 15th cutoff, or are you talking about June, July, August birthdays?
More late in the actual draft class, before the cutoff, but sort of a later birthday.
Yeah, because, just because I wonder how to perspective, if we see people run numbers on these kind of things. If somebody does something great and they're born in mid-August, as opposed to somebody who does something equally as great, but they're born in mid-February, there is a really large gap in how impressive that is. And it's not the kind of thing where I personally wouldn't go look for players in those kind of birthdays. I think that's kind of pointless. Talent is talent no matter when it was born. But my sense in the birthday is you have to take it in context. If the player is this good now, you look at the birthday and you kind of, like, you have to reel back expectations or push them forward. But I wouldn't, like, I believe you said that, I wouldn't go target players at late birthdays just because of that very reason. I don't see that as a logical way to approach the draft.
Right, okay.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen do it. Screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need his theme music. No one man should have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count the hours.
All right, well then, why don't we turn our attention briefly here to the playoffs? One of the early storylines to emerge in almost every series really has been injuries, and you know, a few questionable plays. We've got the Brett Burns elbow on Scott Nickel, which I felt was probably suspension worthy. The head-on-head contact Shaw on goaltender Smith in Phoenix. And I felt that one wasn't quite so bad. We've got a number of others here. Weber on Zetterberg. So anyway, Danny, have you seen many of these plays?
I saw the Hagelin hit on Alfredson last night. It was particularly bad, as well as Matt Karkner going after Brian Boyle. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, this is a sort of direct result of Brendan Shanahan not issuing a suspension to Shea Weber. I don't know if it's that simple. I think the two events were sort of close, and playoff hockey tends to be a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more rough. But I think that it'll be interesting to see what Shanahan does now, just because I think that he'll have to come down a lot more heavy on these guys. I don't think he can sort of issue another fine. So I think we'll probably see a suspension for Hagelin.
Yeah, honestly, I'd like to see him come down hard on a number of them. I would say Weber should have been suspended. Kartner's got to go. Burns, I feel, should go. The Smith on Shaw, I don't think it was that bad. Yeah, Hagelin. I guess I would be okay with that. Do you feel Boyle was? I guess I don't want to say he was asking for that sort of beat down, but, you know, is Boyle writing checks that he can't cash here?
I don't know. I think that sort of that was the commentary from a lot of Sens fans anyways, was that, you know, Boyle had to answer for his treatment of Erik Karlsson, and I understand that, but there's a difference between at least accept and give the guy time to drop the gloves and Wagner did, where it was almost skate in, sort of shove him once and then start feeding him less to the face. So I think, you know, he might have had to sort of answer for that, but I think that it doesn't excuse the way Carpenter handled it. And I think, again, that the NHL really needs to sort of crack down on this idea of vigilante justice, especially to the extent that we saw it with Carpenter, and then, I mean, Bertuzzi went after Weber, but it wasn't as bad. I think that's what we've been trying to get out of the game and sort of crept back in. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a level of it in the playoffs when things get intense and heated and guys are targeting other guys, but it was a very specific sort of, we're going after you because you went after him, and I think that's something that the NHL needs to do a better job. Even the in-game officials need to do a better job of as well.
All right. So any surprises so far for you so far in the series in the playoffs? For me, the LA Kings going up 2-0 on Van is pretty eyebrow raising.
Yeah, definitely. I think everything's gone sort of as I expected it to. You know, I was surprised that that Ottawa was able to sort of scrape out an overtime win, but I didn't see the Rangers sweeping that series anyways. So yeah, I'd have to say that LA jumping out to a 2-0 lead. I saw them maybe taking one game in Vancouver, but two straight is a little bit of a surprise, and definitely makes things more difficult for Vancouver for the rest of the series, that's for sure.
I have to say the Philly and Pittsburgh series also sort of has caught my eye. I mean, okay, I confess, it was one of the series I was most excited to see at the beginning of the playoffs, but at the same time, I really didn't expect Philly to wind up going up 2-0 after two games in Pittsburgh.
No, definitely not. I think that it'll be interesting to sort of see what happens this afternoon. I think the game's already started. I don't know if either of you are watching it. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, how Pittsburgh responds on the road, because I just, you know, you can't really go down 3-0 and hope to have a shot at this. And I think a guy who should be getting more flack but probably isn't is Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, he's sort of, everyone sort of gives Luongo flack for, you know, letting in all these bad goals and being the downfall of the Canucks. But Fleury just hasn't been great at all in the first two games. He's given up, what, 12 goals or something like that? So I think he needs to be better, and I don't think that Pittsburgh's going anywhere if he's not.
Corey, do you have any, are you surprised by anything so far?
I'm never surprised at all when in a two-game sample of the NHL.
Wow,
so, I know you guys are trying to paint some, I know you guys are talking about the narrative involved and everything, but I mean the LA has been a great team down the stretch. I mean, we can argue that they're as good as Vancouver, but I mean, they already played as a near elite team in the West down the stretch there after they acquired Carter and lost Jack Johnson. So
yeah,
them being able to go toe to toe with Vancouver, I don't see it as a surprise at all. And Philly, I know Pittsburgh obviously is a great team that obviously since they added Crosby, they just become that much better. But Philly is definitely a pushover either. So we get two game samples in the NHL. But usually just great teams facing great teams. I'm not really surprised by anything right now.
Well, I guess that's fair to say. I mean, it's true, anything can happen within a small sample size. All right then. Yeah, Corey, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Yeah, see ya.